When I was a kid, my father, we had a record player in my room, and my father would play all different things, Peter and the Wolf, and different kinds of exposed me to different kinds of music, including folk music, Pete Seeger, and always a favorite, the Big Rock Candy Mountain. Andy Serling of the New York Racing Association joins us as we continue Belmont opening preview day here on At the Races. Andy, good morning.
I was really entranced by the trip down memory lane. So, you know, I don't want to drop that.
If you want me to riff on this, I'll launch into a, you know.
Sure, you could. That's okay. We'll do that Friday. Okay, I don't want to, you know. I would really be excited by it, but I'm just not sure that your viewers would be as into it as I am. So let's, you know, we'll do that later.
Well, there's plenty to talk about because virtually everything that's come before you and even something that's coming after you, Grand Motion, is right in your wheelhouse. We talked to Tony Alivato earlier and Jeff Franklin.
Me too. You've had a similar morning. You and I both spoke to Tony. Who was on?
Did you talk to Nick Tamaro too?
There was
who Nick.
Was after Tony? Did
okay.
You say Jeff Franklin?
Jeff Franklin. No.
Wow, you had quite a day.
Yeah, yeah. It's been nuts. It's
I like Jeff. I haven't talked to Jeff in a little while. How's he doing?
We all appreciate Jeff's lot in life, which is working with Jerry Brown, which
it's something to be envied. I had a great talk with Jerry. I spoke to Jerry for a while the other day. It was great, actually. It's funny because I haven't spoken to him, and Randy Moss brought to me that. They asked me if I talked to Jerry. And then, like, suddenly, literally, like, less than a day later, Jerry texted me out of the blue for the first time in a while, and I talked to him. No, I haven't talked for a while either day. It was nice. Sounds good.
That's funny because that's actually what happened last night with the situation with Tony. You and I were talking and literally we got off the phone and my phone buzzes and I look down and it's Pat. And he said, do you have room for Tony Alivato tomorrow? And I said, of course. And it was hysterical. It was the same kind of thing.
I think that all that's really being shown here is that we're a very small circle of people that have no friends. Other than each other.
Right?
Somehow that circle, with each of us only having a handful of friends and acquaintances, that we all sort of mesh together.
Well, exactly. Jeff's an innocent victim in all of this. We're looking forward.
Right. Go ahead.
I finish up because then I'll come back around and I got to ask you other thing. Okay. Hey, well, Ryan Flanders just joined us and he's got this trip note concept and I've invoked repeatedly your concept that was just a big innovation and that was trips and traps, and there hasn't really been a consistent attempt to identify race watching qualities. And I'd love for you, Andy, to revisit this because it's something that, you know, when you point out and when you have, you know, video explanations on the previews or during the race afternoons, and you show, like the other day, you guys were previewing the Bogey already, and you talked about I forget which race you showed, but the whole trip concept is to me the last I to dot or the T to cross when you're learning your handicapping maxims and understanding how to watch a race, and there's people probably that have been playing for years and they don't necessarily know what they're looking for when it comes to that, and that's why Trips and Traps was such a terrific, helpful, program while you guys were doing it.
I think the race we showed actually was the Mint Julep from Saturday.
Yes. That's what
we
it was.
We were pointing out Altea, who had significant trouble in the race.
Yes. Yes.
Well, thank you on Trips and Traps. It was a true labor of love for many years. You know, I just think people should understand one of the reasons that we stopped doing is it's very labor intensive for a number of people, not just myself. And we have a lot more on our plate from a TV standpoint. And I'm not just talking about myself. I'm talking about the TV truck as well in producing these shows. And unfortunately, it makes it so that sometimes things become more difficult to do. And that was, you know, it's also about time for me and different things. So, you know, we're not doing it anymore, unfortunately. But there are reasons, and I'm part of that. Watching races is subjective. One person's bad trip is not necessarily another person's bad trip. And, you know, right and wrong, I believe things that are right and things that are wrong, but it's subjective. There are other people, two people watch a race or a trip, and one person will think that it's a bad trip, and another person will think it's inconsequential. I don't get caught up in sort of obvious trouble situations. To me, first of all, it's an ever-evolving thing. I mean, it's one of the many fun things about being a handicapper is your opinions need to evolve, right? I think that Chad Brown was quoting Bobby Frankel and saying, you know, something to the effect of that if you're not, you know, moving forward, you're not changing, you're falling behind, basically. You know, and if you're not, as a handicapper, if you're not adapting as time moves on, then you're going to fall behind, especially as a player, because the landscape has changed a lot, right? I mean, you look at the landscape 25, 30 years ago, and, you know, even then, going back, there were only a handful of people before the 90s using speed figures. Well, everybody has access to good speed figures if they want them, as far as the buyers and, you know, whether it's, you know, other speed figures. But there are solid speed figures available to people. And so knowing the fastest horse in the race is no longer doing you a lot of good, right? Now, I almost think as time has evolved from a handicapping standpoint, a lot of us or some of us have evolved more to looking at class as much as looking at speed figures because, you know, horses that used to pay $15 that now pay $7 and $6, you got to find new ways to be more because you're not picking winners. What you're doing is you're trying to be more clever than the other people who are betting, right? So you have to find new ways to adapt to that. And one of the ways potentially is trip handicapping, right? Because there's not a lot of it out there. It's accessible to anybody, but, you know, people have different opinions. I think that people massively overrate small instances of trouble. To me, the start of a race is without question the most important part of a race because it can or will set the table for a horse's trip going forward. And, you know, the majority of the time, horses will break reasonably well and they'll establish whatever position they do, but sometimes they won't. And a horse, you know, I don't like when somebody says, oh, that horse broke 4 lengths slow. And you watch the replay and he actually broke about a half length behind the field. But he encountered trouble after it, which may have placed him 3 to 5 lengths behind. It's not that the horse, and I'm a stickler for accuracy, it's not that the horse broke 4 lengths slow. It's that because the horse broke a step slow, a half length slow, or whatever, because of that, maybe the door closed on him and it had a steady back. And, you know, by the time he sort of found himself or herself getting into stride, the race had developed in front of them and the horse was 4 to 5 lengths behind where he should have been through no fault of his own necessarily, or maybe partially his own, but nothing other than a break that just didn't work out. So then that horse has to find a way to make up ground that he might not have had to make up. His whole position is different. Sometimes it changes the whole dynamic of a race, right? A horse who's the controlling speed gets shuffled out at the start for whatever reasons, and then somebody's able to control the race up front. So there are a lot of things that take place, right? The dominoes fall in a lot of different ways. And I think it's up to us as handicappers to say, how did it affect this horse individually? And then potentially, how did it affect the entire race? And, you know, if they ran that race again, we're going to presume that horse wouldn't get left and the race would be run in a very different manner. Maybe that horse could have won, or maybe some horse that finished third that got no pace to run at and was badly compromised and still ran well. And, you know, evaluating individual horses as well as the race in a total, I think it's fascinating. You know, I listen, I love handicapping, right? All the time spent, you know, you could spend an hour or whatever period of time, you know, I don't want to over-exaggerate, but, you know, certainly a half an hour to 45 minutes looking at an individual race, some more than others. But there's races at Belmont on Friday that I have a couple races I haven't even made picks for, and I've just spent so much time, and I realized this morning, it's like I'm just going to have to make picks because I could argue about those races with myself forever. But that's where you put in a lot of time, and you put that time in for a race that takes about a minute to 2 minutes to be run, right? But in that minute to 2 minutes that a race is run, there's an enormous, sometimes, not always, I mean, a lot of races, some races are, you know, they're pretty straightforward. They played out relatively well, much like you thought they would have, or they should have. Maybe your horses didn't run as well as you thought they would have, or some horses ran better than you expected. But nonetheless, there are a lot of races that a lot of stuff happens, right? And you want to evaluate not only how did this trouble affect an individual horse or two or three or whatever, but how did it affect the entire running of the race? Because sometimes you want to say, you know, yeah, that horse won, okay. But do you realize the domino of effect, domino of events that you know that had to happen for that horse to win? There was a race at Aqueduct this winter. Queen Kahane, I think, is the horse that won. And I remember there was a crazy confluence of events of steeds getting left, horses getting in trouble, and the entire domino effect of things that had to happen for that horse to win was almost remarkable, you know? And I think that stuff is endlessly fascinating. And the other thing about it is, in analyzing it in that respect, it should help you in the future. And, you know, it's not as though just because you see these things and believe this way that everything you think is right or everything plays out the same way the next time they run. You still have to evaluate the race the next time they run. But in general, it's going to help you understand racing better. And a lot of people in life, and also in racing, are very much result-oriented. And see, I'm the opposite. Maybe I go to an extreme the other way, somebody might say, which is fine. You know, I don't have a problem with that. I certainly don't have a problem with any constructive criticism. I'm far from perfect like everybody. But, you know, you people look at results, they say, no, that horse won, therefore he was the best horse. Well, that's just crap. I mean, very often the best horse did win a race, and I love when races are over and you can feel, especially when you're wrong, you know what, my opinion was bad, or I was wrong, and the best horse won, and back to the drawing board, and what I learned from that, that's fine. But I think it's important to understand when, in fact, the best horse didn't win, and why a horse might have won, and why certain horses might have lost. And being result-oriented in life is bad, and being result-oriented in any type of betting activity is really a bad idea, because it'll just skew your opinion on a lot of different things. It'll have a domino effect, right? You'll misevaluate horses in the race going forward. You'll think that they weren't good enough, and maybe they were. You'll over-evaluate a horse going forward. And I understand horses that constantly find ways to lose are problematic, but and horses that always seem like a mind control, right? He's a horse that just always seems to find a way to win, and he's a frustrating horse for me because he's not that fast. He's a really good horse. I'm not trying to knock him. But from a speedier standpoint, I know you understand this, he doesn't belong in some high pantheon of, you know, grade one winners. But he wins, man. He finds ways to win. So he's a problematic, frustrating horse for me, and he goes against a lot of the tenets I have in handicapping. That doesn't mean I'm supposed to throw out everything I believe in because there's an outlier out there that sometimes proves me to be wrong. But I think it's important to understand that there's some horses that do find ways to win, but you can't be overly result-oriented in general in life, and especially in horse racing, or really any sort of gambling, whether it's sports betting or other types of to gambling, or stock analysis, right? Why is that stock, why is the market up despite all of these outside events suggesting it should be much lower? Why is it up? Why shouldn't it be up? I don't know, you know, but that's all of these things. Results are not always the answer.
No, well stated, and it you know, it's one of those elements that I think some play. You know, what's funny about this, and this would actually be a great poll question. You've luckily been able to retire from those polls, which you put a tremendous amount of effort in. You know, what handicapping element that other people, you know, consider vital, do you as an individual sort of neutralize or tune out, as
well,
it were?
I tune out jockeys for the most part. I think there's a misunderstanding of why I do this. It's not out of lack of respect for jockeys. In fact, it's the exact opposite. It's out of enormous respect for the riders in New York. As a general rule in New York, we are extremely fortunate to have an incredibly talented jockey colony where, for the most part, these guys do a good job. Doesn't mean everybody makes mistakes, and riders, you know, understand they're faced with a lot of different situations, and they're going to make the wrong choice, and I'm sure they're as frustrated as anybody. But in general, you don't lose that often in New York because you might get a rider that makes the wrong decision. But because of, you know, I think all of us have seen, I think one thing we've seen during the pandemic is a lot of racetracks that we might not have watched in the past, and perhaps some of us that are spoiled by this super talented riders that we have seen some riding at other racetracks that maybe has opened our eyes up to how fortunate we are to have the riding colony that we have in New York and a high-level racetrack, where the riders, for most part, they just don't affect the results because for the vast majority of the time, they give good rides. So I don't pay attention to that, really, because I just assume, for the most part, these guys are going to do the right thing. I just agree with
that. And you and I have discussed this. And you and I have you know, kind of bandied this about, because Trips is the central, you know, the central tenant to your approach, and race flow and anticipated part of your approach. I mean, race flow.
I don't want to believe that I have a central tenant to my handicapping. I don't think there's anything more important than speed figures, because at the end of the day, if your horse under ideal circumstances isn't fast enough, then it's tough to make a scenario for that horse to win. Unless you have a reason to believe the horse might be improving. That's a different discussion. But I think Trips are a big part of it. And the reason that Trips are... When you trade options, the Black and Scholes model is based on five variables. Now, one of the variables no longer is relevant because interest rates have gone to zero. But, you know, it's stock price, strike price, time until expiration, and volatility. Volatility is the one thing that can constantly be in flux from day to day or even hour to hour. The other things are relatively known variables. I think Trips are one of those things where the variable is in flux because different people will analyze Trips in a different way. Yeah, different people analyze speed figures and some, you know, how fast horses in some different ways. But they're, you know, the Thoroughgraphs, the Ragazins, they have a sort of Trip element to it. So maybe they're taking that into account in a certain way, which you may or may not agree with, but that's a different variable. But as a general rule, I think that's a real move. You know, another variable would be somebody that believes in the physicality of horses very much and is able to look at them. There are a lot of people that think they can, and I'm not sure all of them can do it as well as they think they can. I listen to Maggie, you know, because I can't do that. So if Maggie likes some long shot that I sort of, especially if I have it as sort of a fringe somewhere, and she thinks the horse looks really good, as opposed to previous races, I might throw that horse in. And, you know, vice versa, if she really is down on a horse that I kind of really like, I'm going to reduce my play a little bit, you know. And she will admit that she's not, you know, she's not infallible. She was in my office one day at Aqueduct, and I really liked the horse. She came in, and she said, "Oh, Andy, I know you like this horse. I really don't like how it looks." And I lowered my bet. She felt terrible after the race. And I said, "Maggie, your opinion probably wasn't wrong. The horse still won, you know. You're beating yourself up over, you know, your opinion. I trust your opinion like I trust, you know, other smart people's opinions." But I think Trips are that variable that won't be necessarily the same for me as it is for another person. It's a long-winded answer to that. Very long-winded.
Not that long. Andy, by the way, I've got a, this is just awful. I got to slip this in. This morning's breaking news, apparently Arrogate has died from a neurologic situation.
Oh, that's terrible.
At Root and Riddle this morning. It's unbelievable.
He was only 7, huh?
7 years old.
Oh, that sucks. Jeez.
Unbelievable.
Well, his Travers will, to me, I've seen a lot of races. I don't recall seeing a more sort of singularly jaw-dropping performance in a big race and I felt at the most opportune time as his. I'll never forget watching him streaking down the stretch. I think I was watching the Seth actually in the box, and just being like, wow, you know, that was, we've all seen a lot of great performances from time to time, but at a stage like that, a race like that, well, that's a shame. And his Dubai World Cup,
we'll get,
you know.
Gordon.
I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, that was.
He was a horse. I think his Breeders' Cup was incredible. You know, when you think that he basically let California Chrome at the run of the race, and make no mistake, California Chrome was pretty damn good. And he let him have the run of the race. It just didn't matter. He still just ran him down. And, you know, he had a brief period of time, what, four races, really, where he was a sight to behold. That's a shame. Really,
we'll get details. I sent a note to Garrett O'Rourke, but it's all over the place this morning, and apparently a neurologic something started in his neck, and we'll get it's just brutal. So there'll be a limited, obviously there'll be a, yeah, go ahead.
No, is Ram on now?
No, not yet. Wait a minute. You think you're going? You think you're getting wrapped up without a? First of all, we started late with you, so you have to go for another 9 minutes.
I saw it opening.
You're unbelievable.
I saw a worm.
Wait, all you're going to do is.
I saw a wormhole in my kitchen. And I was thinking this would be my opportunity.
Oh my God. Can we get some opinions about the Belmont coming up? A couple of couple.
That one in particular, I saw Wes Unseld died. I love Wes Unseld. My mother was a big
Wes Unseld died.
Wes Unseld.
Oh, but this is getting worse and worse.
Wes Unseld threw an outlet pass like nobody. Would you like opinions on Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday at Belmont and Churchill, or just? I mean, I got a lot going on here, Steve.
Yes, you do. Your best opinion.
Tomorrow's opening day at Belmont.
How about opening day at Belmont?
Well, my picks for Wednesday and Thursday are on the website. As soon as I can finish those two races I have unpicked for Friday, I'll get them up as well. You know, between them and looking at Churchill, I'm even more insane about getting work done as soon as I can. You know, listen, the reality is I think we're all just thrilled to be getting back to, you know, the races and work and getting the sense of normalcy in this part back. So that's the biggest thing, you know, as far as it's not an easy card. You know, I thought the first race, the 2, 4, 5, and 9 were the 2, 4, 5, and 10 were the right horses. I picked the 10 Kilmart knockoff over Star of West. They were sort of my main two. I like Mandate, the 1 a little bit in the second race. Probably got to beat Graham's horse, Smile Brian, the way Graham's going. I wouldn't be surprised if he wins, but he's not, and I'm sure Graham would agree, exactly a winning type. And I would also think that he probably is concerned that a mile might be a stretch for him, but we'll see. He could win. Just because, you know, somebody, do you think somebody named him after Simon?
I lost you for a minute.
I'm saying the second race. There's a horse named Bray. I'm wondering if it's named after Simon. I love Simon.
That's a good question.
That's the horse that's had very good trips in his two races, so I'd be careful about him as the favorite in the second race. I know there's a horse named Fauci in the third race. I had it down to the inside 3. We'll see. Wesley Ward has not had his usual year with two-year-olds, but I think he was hurt by the cancellation of Keeneland, where he had so many horses ready to roll against a lot of horses that just were kind of inferior. The fourth race is very, very tough. There's a horse in there, Stonebreaker, I picked. Speaking of horses that were eliminated at the start in their last races, and I was kind of hoping maybe he could blast off and wire, but, you know, the horse to beat's Business Cycle, but he, too, is not a big winning type. The fifth race, I preferred Stronger Than You Know, the 1 over the 10, Sarah La Love. They seem like the right 2. Maybe the 9 factorization is okay. The 6 is a terrific turf allowance. I mean, Passive Investing and Medita are the horses to beat in there, the 1 and 3. The six, of course, Fashion Star actually ran pretty well against Leicester last time. I thought the 12 English Soul would be a solid price and was very usable in there at a square price. The seventh race, I sort of leaned the outside runners in there. I preferred the 9 Lorenzen and over Inside Information or Inside Info and the Grateful Dead Horse, Box of Rain. A lot of Grateful Dead Horse around. Well, of course, those are that horse and China Cat that ran the other day, both the same owner or named by the same person. On the 10th race, or the 8th race, is, you know, the turf debut of Hidden Scroll. We'll see. You know, I'm starting to get a little tired of him. And he has a lot of turf pedigree, but his dam has not really been a turf producer. He's got to deal with Value Proposition. He's got to deal with the 5 Arthur Kitt. And some others as well. Cross Border is dangerous. That's a very tough race. I think the Vogue is, you know, it's very much between Rushing Fall and Got Stormy, and it's tough to beat both of them. I do think Shook's horse passing out the 5 is improving, and I won't be surprised to see her run well. I don't think she's quite good enough, but I think she's going to improve and take a step forward this year. And the last race, I picked Ventus, 3 off the Rudy claim. I just didn't have a strong way to go in there. Is that enough?
Nice. No, a great run. That's a great rundown.
Hey, thanks. I appreciate it. It means a lot to me.
Before we go too, looking back at the weekend and particularly on Saturday, any thoughts about the two stake performances? Bell's the one that we talked to Neil Pessin yesterday, and Graham is next.
Yeah, no, I think Bell's the one. I like Bell's the one going into the race, so I'm not shocked she ran well. Yeah, that's an interesting race from a to analyze from trip perspective, because, you know, in retrospect, Break Even is not just very fast. She's also very good. So she's a real problem for a horse like Me and Mischief, because there's a distinct but in time subtle difference between stalking and chasing. And you can stalk bad speeds in the sense that you don't really use your horse's energy trying to keep up. But when you have to stalk a talented speed, you don't end up stalking as much as chasing, if that makes sense. And I think that Mia Mischief found herself chasing break-even speed, and that completely mitigated any kind of closing rallies you have. You know, I'll give you a race that's a reasonable example. When Complexity won the Champagne a couple of years ago, year and a half ago, all the chasers just tired from chasing him, and Code of Honor, who got left that day, stumbled that day, he ended up picking up the pieces for second, and he was able to do it because he didn't get tired from chasing. But if you look at all the horses that chase Complexity, including some good horses like Endorsed, they just totally fell apart trying to chase his speed and his stamina. So I think that that's why Me and Mischief, and there's Bell's the one who's good, and she's just sitting in the back of the pack, and she made her run and was able to get by them. But she's also very good. But I think that Me and Mischief was compromised because she got into that chase mode instead of a stalking mode. And as far as the Mint Julep, you know, obviously it's sort of, in retrospect, I don't know how Graham's horse paid $54, because she should have been a fraction of that price, 8 to 12 to 1 somewhere. Not that she should have been a short price, but nobody should have been a short price, and the favorite should have been under 2 to 1. It's crazy, as much as she was the worst to beat. That was a race of trips. And I think Graham would be the first one to say to you, and not that the winner isn't a deserving winner, but I think Graham would be the first one to say, you know your run is, you're going well when you win a race like that with a photo like that. And Graham's horses have been running extremely well at Churchill, and he's clearly done a good job, you know, getting them ready, you know, and finding the right horses for races. And John Velasquez has given sort of one exceptional ride to one horses one after the other. He's been riding very well there. But Graham probably the first one to say, you know, you're going well when you're winning every coin flip too, you know. And that race was a bit of a coin flip. She got the right ride and trip, and she got up by a head or nose, you know. And it was a great race going in, and it played out as a great race on paper.
You know, and I'm going to say to Graham shortly, too, he's going to hate to see John Velasquez go back to New York, although, of course, he can ride him in spots in New York. But, you know, Johnny has really had a nice run at Churchill. Oh, I mean,
I just said that.
Right?
I just said
it. Yeah, I'm saying. I get it. I'm behind
it. He's had a nice run. He's been riding extremely well. I mean, Johnny could be on, you know, a lot of horses for Todd in the past that were sort of rocking chair winners. Johnny has been affecting results at Churchill with exceptional riding, getting good position, you know, being very aware of his environment. I think Johnny's riding has been exceptional there. It's not, he's not winning races. He's winning races because he's riding well. You know, riders will win races often just because they're on the best horse. Johnny's been on some good horses, but he's also ridden them extraordinarily well and made the right decisions. He's really riding well. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
And tell Graham to stick to politics on Twitter.
Andy Serling, everybody, and the coverage picks back up, and it is going to be really fun.
Belmont
and Churchill. Yeah, and exactly. And is there going to be some
fun.
Amos? How about some Amos and Andy? Is there going to be any Amos
Tom
and Andy?
It's hard for Tom. I mean, you know, it's not easy at Churchill. He's riding a lot of horses and stuff. So hopefully we'll have him a little bit, but I think it's tough. But we've got Jonathan, you know, we'll be handling a lot of that stuff. And, you know, we'll be doing it in New York, and Greg will be joining us, which will be great. Greg Wolf, so looking forward to that as well. I'm going to let you go and talk to Graham, and I'll talk to you later.
Andy Serling, everybody, and follow Andy, of course, and the team. There's also, if you haven't seen it, I just retweeted, Pat McKenna sent out a link to that story that's in the New York Post today. And the Post had essentially a background story of the television show that has really been featured, pretty much all morning. Really cool. And there's a picture of Maggie. I can understand why they chose to have Maggie be the photo subject instead of Andy. And it's called How Belmont Park-Based Horse Racing Show Overcame Corona Challenges. And Greg Joyce wrote it. And watch on the feed. Very cool. And then there's also, boy, there's quite a bit of... I really don't look at the Post, at their website anyway, but inside how Belmont Park is bringing racing back and where every sport stands in Corona comeback planning, racing has distinguished itself when it comes to handling the virus and keeping the game afloat and keeping owners and outfits and horse players engaged. Graham Motion has been a part of it, and Graham was with us last week, but hard not to bring Graham back when his secret message was the linchpin to so many of you that came along and cashed out in the pick four or better straight in her win in the Mint Julep. We've been fetting John Velasquez about it, and now we get to congratulate Graham as well. Graham, well done.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thank you.
I became a big fan of hers last year, and I thought, while everybody seemingly was, I won't say focused, but I think it's fair to say there was more conversation about Varenka going into this race because of trip scenarios, but I focused on Secret, and boy, you're going to hate to see Johnny leave Churchill, because you two have been awfully good together.
Yeah, I mean, it's really clicked. He rides one for me on Thursday in New York, which is great, standard deviation, so hopefully we can keep it going. But look, when you can get Johnny, Hall of Fame rider, on a roll like he's on, riding so well, and you can supply him with some really nice quality horses, he gets the job done, and he's given all these horses beautiful rides, so he just seems to be in his own, which is I'm glad to be part of it.
Now, talk about bringing this hat trick mare back. Starts the five-year-old season, the Hyder family, and Sol Kumin, and Eric Johnson, and more.
You
got a hat full of owners.
Brad and Liz Crow picked this filly out at Turfway, several winters ago now. So I give them a lot of credit. They didn't pay a huge amount of money for her. and she has turned into a beautiful filly. She's stunning. And I think last year, you know, Brad and I strategized a lot over the schedule, and I think we determined that she just, first of all, I think she'd had a long year and it was catching up with her. And secondly, I think we just decided she's better at these mile 16th distances. So that's going to be our focus this year. You know, several people asked me on Twitter before the race, who I like better between her and Varenka. I couldn't have really separated them from training in the morning. I was a little surprised at the price that she went off at compared to Varenka. Was not smart enough to bet, but was glad to see the result, and she got a perfect ride.
It really, I mean, in terms of timing, and then, you know, in terms of finding a path to the wire, I mean, it all came together. And, you know, that's one of the challenges of these fields. But again, Johnny keeps putting the horses in the right spots. And La Signore was coming up the rail with Santana and Zofel, you know, who was another talking trip horse with Corey Lannery, was persevering to the wire. This was a really fun running of the Mint Julep. What do you look toward? You got something in mind for midsummer or early summer?
You know, I think it's possible we could come back for the Jenny Wiley. I believe that's in the middle of July. Mm. England. Yep. That would seem like it would be a good fit, you know? So that's something we'll take a look at. I'm always a little apprehensive second race off a layoff when they run such a big race first time. But the thing is, with these fillies I've been running, is they've been in training for a long time, and I think they're all pretty fit. So hopefully this race won't set her back too much.
Now, we took a shine to her last year, and she certainly rewarded the confidence, yours and everybody involved, and the players, and somehow she floated up to almost 26 to 1, Graham. It was... She's the gift that keeps on giving. So, well done
on
that
amazing
front.
Yeah,
meanwhile,
considering Johnny was riding her, I think that's extraordinary, because so often, you know, people tend to bet riders somewhat. So, surprising that she was such a big price.
And you look at who took money between, you know, the favorites. I mean, obviously, Julia Foxtrot was... You know, on paper was a deserving favorite, not a 3-2 though. And but then you look down the list, and there's some very surprising horses that took money ahead of her. I mean, it was very strange. Anyway, we were appreciative, and I wanted to, you know, say a very public thank you. And of course, as you pointed out to me yesterday, people have a thank you as well for Crystal Cliffs, who you gave a push to last week and came back on Sunday and rewarded that confidence.
Yeah, I would call it a subtle push.
Well, most of your delivery is subtle.
She had Sharing's last work was with Crystal Cliffs before Sharing ran.
Yes.
She's pretty much worked with everybody since she came in. By that, I mean, you know, some of my better fillies. So we were pretty confident. Obviously, the word was out because I think she opened up at 2-1. She looks like a filly that can handle distance-wise pretty much anything. We like the idea of starting her at a mile and eighth. I think it's fun to have another nice three-year-old filly, and this filly looks like she'll really suit the distances later in the summer in these longer races in New York.
She's a Canford Cliffs and just a three-year-old, and so lots yet to come from her. Michael Dubb and Matakits Alcumin and Wonder Stables all partnered up, and you also got things going nicely at Laurel, got the rebooted season off to a nice start, and that came yesterday with Maryland Moe, appropriately named.
Yeah, great to be back running at Laurel. It's like Christmas. Trevor worked this horse over the last month or two. He was pretty high on him. He's a much better horse training on the synthetic than on the dirt, which we started him on last year. He's still kind of a big green horse, but I tell you, these Uncle Mo's are phenomenal. You know, and really, most of them seem to handle the grass, and most of them can run.
Well, and it just so happens, too, that, I mean, he's out of a Cosine mare, so it's, you know, a little added,
sure.
You got a little added turf. And this is
sure.
For Al Frisetto. Great to see Al with a what looks like a promising young horse.
Yeah, Al's the best. So supportive, so steady, never gets too ruffled by anything. I'm so fortunate to have him and John in the stable. Always looking to pick up, you know, fresh stock. They have a really nice filly in Europe right now running, who won the other day when the French racing opened. So, great people to win for.
Well, and you mentioned Laurel getting started. You're heavily involved later in the week, Friday and Saturday. And, of course, we get going at Belmont tomorrow. You got Smile Brian in that second. And, in fact, Andy just talked a little bit about that spot and about this turf mile. He said maybe you aren't convinced that the mile is what Smile Brian wants. And then on Thursday, Devant comes back in an allowance. And you mentioned Standard Deviation and Johnny in the Tiller Stakes. Talk about getting the Belmont season going.
Yes, yeah, so Smile Brian and Devant are both coming back pretty quickly. You know, we went to Churchill with these guys before we saw the Belmont condition book or before we even knew we were running in New York. So they're coming back a little quickly. It's an odd year. You know, odd things are going to happen this year. But I felt that they both came out of their races well enough to run back quickly. I was desperate to get Smile Brian back on the grass. I don't think that was the ideal race for him at Churchill. I'm anxious to see how he handles the mile. I don't know why he wouldn't get it. But, you know, this is a perfect opportunity to try it. And Devant, we really wanted to try a 7/8. I wasn't looking to run a 5/8, which we did at Churchill. This is a much better spot for her if the trip to Kentucky didn't take too much out of her. And Standard Deviation is coming off a big race in Qatar. He was beaten by a horse that ran pretty well in the arc, I believe. I didn't make the trip to Qatar, but he ran a really good race. Hossein Murphy rode him and really liked him. He thought going the wrong way in Qatar maybe hurt him a little bit. He was a little confused with his lead switches and what have you, but he ran a super race out there, and he's come back really well. I think we've given him plenty of time, so this is a good spot for him. It's a competitive overnight stake, but we've got to get him started over here, and he's got a good draw, and we've got Johnny.
And finally, Graham, Friday, what do we know about the Irish bred, Bredenbury, who may be kind of stepping forward? It feels like that Tampa race might have been a bit of a confidence builder.
Well, look, Eddie Keneally's filly that beat her at Tampa came back and won the Tampa Oaks. I believe I'm right in saying that. So the form there is pretty good. I actually shipped this filly to Churchill, and her race came off the grass going 5/8, but I prefer this race going 3/4. We just feel like Andrew Stone and I have talked about her a lot, and we just feel like probably she's more of a sprinter than a distance, than a route horse. So hopefully this will get her back on track.
Graham Motion and plenty of other starters. Plenty of other starters that we could probably delve into, but Graham, I just, you know, want to try to lift your spirits. I know that.
Listen, it's nice to be talking about horses with all the craziness that's going on in the world, which is just so sad right now. It's almost hard. You have to put things in perspective, but just devastating what we're seeing going on in this country. And I thank God we have the horses.
Well, and that's actually seen, I think, a lot of people through very much. You know, you have got, you know, I invoked a call for empathy on Friday as we were going into the weekend, and I mentioned it again this morning, and, you know, you've got lots of sensitivities toward social issues, and so I can appreciate you know, how you're feeling. I understand completely.
We all should, Steve. We all should be worried.
I don't disagree. Graham Motion, everybody, and you should be following Graham on Twitter and appreciate his frankness on all topics. We're going to head toward the afternoon. I told you, opening day at Fort Erie, and we got Lone Star Park back today, Mountaineer tonight, Assiniboia later as well. And I want to thank everybody that came through. It's been a busy morning. Tony Oliveto and Andy Serling, of course, from NYRA, and Jeff Franklin from Thorograph. Ryan Matthews was with us. Ryan, Benny South Street, B South Street on Twitter. Trip Note Pros getting launched. Graham Motion just now. And Nick Tamaro and Nick's analysis for Belmont Every Day, brought to you by Roberts and the RTN network. We'll talk about, you know, now that they're all the racetracks are back running for the most part, we'll get you that deal at RTN. If you sign up, you get 5 days free to try it, and we'll give you more of that in coming days and weeks. But Roberts sponsoring Nick's analysis of the Belmont Stakes meet, and it'll be up at the races as well. Good luck today if you're playing. Wednesday at the races with you tomorrow. Replay 6 to 9, and then I'll talk to you live in the morning. Stay safe. Thanks, everybody.
latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice. Voices sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.